Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Triple Jump podcast. It's a video game podcast. My name is Ben.
My name is Peter.
And my name is Ashton.
We're all back.
We're all here.
Hello.
In the same room. Yeah. How are we doing today?
Good.
Great.
Brilliant. As of the time of recording, I'm still without a flushing toilet.
Yeah.
Even though I was working from home last Friday when we recorded the big discussion, because I was waiting for a plumber, he's still not come.
No.
So still flushing the toilet with a bucket of water, having a good time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but at least you don't have to like go elsewhere to use the toilet.
Yeah, you do
That's
have
true.
A toilet.
I do have a toilet I can use.
And
it's
a bucket.
Just very inconvenient.
bucket.
Can always go in the bucket.
Mm. Yeah.
This is our video game podcast where each and every week we're sponsored by a very real video game adjacent sponsor, Ashton. I believe you have the ad read in front of you right now.
I do. Obviously, last week I was sent one, but I had to send it on to you because I had head plops.
Yeah, you had the head plops.
But this week I've actually received a full PR package.
Whoa.
Bit incognito. They sent it to me on the DL.
Yeah.
You didn't tell us about that. No, for a game, I'm telling you now.
Okay, sorry.
For a game that's coming out next week, Tuesday to be specific. You guys know when you were like in school and you'd get like those little heads that like you put Crest in and they'd get like hair.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, well, yeah.
In America, they have a different name for that because they use a different kind of seed. They don't use Crest. They use chia seeds and they have a certain thing.
Yes.
So as a PR package for the game that's coming out next week, I was sent a Tachia pet.
Tachia pet.
For the game. Tachia.
Is it pronounced Tachia?
I think it's pronounced Chia.
I think it's just Chia, but I wanted to, you know, not just say the word.
Yeah.
It's Chia that's coming out next week, and Chia they sent pets. Me a Chia pet.
A Chia pet.
Yeah.
How is it growing?
Well, I only just got it.
Oh,
so like right now it's just a head with mud
right.
in it, and eventually it will have nice green hair.
Are you going to eat the cress?
Well,
the Chia?
It's Chia. Probably not, because then I'll have to give his hair a trim.
Can you play online games with your Chia pet? Take it to the soup kitchen, perhaps, if it's not got enough food? Or what else did you used to do? You know Neopets?
Oh, right, no.
No.
I don't know on Neopets.
No, you don't know on Neopets.
No, but I was thinking Tamagotchi. Like, you have to give it food and play with it for
the
half
same
an
thing,
hour a day.
Basically.
I used to play Club Chegwin.
Oh, yeah.
Mm. Good one. Yeah. Anyway, it's not real.
No?
They didn't send me a PR package.
Well, I was looking forward to seeing that and potentially just plucking a few bits of cress and putting it on my sandwich that I don't eat. Chia, sorry. Is it chia when it's fully grown as well? In America?
They call it chia pet.
They do, but I don't know if the leaf is a chia or if it's cress, watercress.
Do they actually call it a chia pet in America? Oh, I didn't know that. I thought you knew that chia was coming out. And you were like, I'm going to do a Neopets pun.
You thought it was a Neopets thing?
I honestly thought it was a Neopets thing. I knew it was about Chia.
Yeah.
But I thought you'd like combine Chia with the heads thing because of Chia and Cress.
Mm.
And then made it sound like Neopets.
No.
It's
a Chia pet is a thing.
I did wonder why you both looked at me slightly blankly when I was making Neopets comparisons.
I did think you were...
confused. confused.
I did think you were talking about Neopets, well, but I wasn't sure why.
Works on multiple levels because it sounds like Chiapets.
It's deep. There's sort multiple of. Layers.
Like we're not sponsored by Chiapet this week. We are, of course, sponsored by our wonderful patrons over at patreon.com/teamtriplejump, where for as little as $1 per month, you could submit questions to this podcast. Loads of other tiers available. Thank you to everyone who asked questions this week. Don't relent. Don't you dare relent, even though, is it Lent now or is Lent coming up? Or
well, it's up till Easter, isn't it?
Is it started? Oh, yeah, it started on Pancake Day.
Yeah.
Oh, that's
right.
What Pancake Day
we're
is.
We're mid-Lent.
Don't relent, but do? I don't know what you meant to do. I don't know what you meant to do in Lent.
You just fast.
Give something up.
Give something up?
Yeah.
Okay.
Chalky.
Don't give up asking questions on the podcast.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Don't relent. I don't know what I'm trying
to
say.
What do you say?
I don't know. Patreon.com/teamtriplejump, $1 to ask questions on this podcast.
Just like Blake Thomas, who said, holy secondary protagonists, Batman. From Atreus to Luigi, who are some of your most memorable sidekicks in gaming?
In gaming.
Thank you, Blake.
I liked slightly kind of, it's not who you immediately think of when you say sidekicks, but I like... Wheatley and GLaDOS both in Portal 2 when they're wandering around with you chatting rubbish. Spark the Dragonfly, very useful. Not his characterization is next to like non-existent unless you play Spyro 3, in which case he just goes
or Enter the Dragonfly where he's voiced by David Spade.
Indeed. But when you get hit like 3 times and you suddenly don't have sparks, you flipping well notice it, not just because you're scared that you're going to die, but because you can't pick up the gems remotely. You have to walk up and touch each one. And actually, it's a massive faff when you don't have sparks. So in that sense, he's one of my favorite sidekicks because he makes life a lot easier.
Hmm.
And then I've got a whole bunch here. Cortana, I think, is great.
Mm-hmm.
She's just like genuinely just a companion who will talk to you. Yes, she'll offer... tactical information, but like she's just a friend as well. She's just a normal friend.
Just massive mates.
Yeah. And then also from a game that I'm a big fan of, I've done Sparks from Spyro, Double H from Beyond Good and Evil.
It's Triple H actually.
It's the evolution.
Get that wrestling out of here.
Pokemon below.
Hunter Hurst.
Yes.
Not the full one.
No. But he's just a man, that's his code name. But he's like a bloke in a suit of armor who just hits things with his head and with his hammer.
Love that.
And constantly quotes from like a military manual all the time and says what you should be doing based on like page 24 of it's called Carlson and Peters actually, but Peters with 2 E's. That's the name of the book. And he's like Carlson and Peters, page 823. We shouldn't be splitting up in this situation. And, you know, he's got all the knowledge.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You're not going to go wrong with Double H on your team.
And this is Beyond Good and Evil.
Yeah.
So when you say page, you mean the literal page of the book and not...
And not Uncle Page. Who is your sidekick for some of the game, but actually in, like, Act 1, at the end of Act 1, he goes away.
Right.
Uncle Page has just got rules written on his back, so he just
lifts
his shirt
up. How many Uncle Pages do you have?
Page 152.
I suspect Uncle Page has a lot of tattoos, so he could have all the rules written on his back. Mm. It's entirely possible.
Cool.
It's like that movie where he's got all of his memories written on his...
Memento.
Memento, yeah.
Hmm. Yeah.
I had a few that I like as well, because that was the question. I really like...
Great stuff, Ashton.
Elizabeth.
Tell us them, please.
Elizabeth from Bioshock Infinite. I think she's just neat.
Booker Catch.
Yeah, she's passes me stuff all the time, which is great because I always miss stuff. It's just nice having her around. She's useful and she's nice.
Sing a song with her at one point.
Yeah, exactly. I also really like Alex Vance, partially because I really like Half-Life Alyx, but also because she's just a great side character. Like, she kicks ass, she's besties with robots, and her dad's really smart. She's really smart. She's going to save the world. Alyx Vance.
Just admit it, you fancy her.
Yeah. Sue me.
I was waiting for that.
I thought that was going to be at least the second point.
Not everything I think is because they're pretty.
I
all right?
disagree.
Yeah.
Based on a lot of evidence that's on video and audio and in tweets.
It'll be awkward if her third submission is like dog meat or something.
Well, my third submission is Erend Van Guardsman from Horizon Zero Dawn.
Which one is that?
The beardy man, the big guy. Who is the soldier for the the car share, but he's
the
one whose sister was missing in the first game, and then in the second, he's the one that drinks all the alcohol.
Yes, I know exactly what you mean. Yeah, the mutton chops.
With the mutton chops. Yeah, I just think he's neat to have around, especially in the second game.
I just think he's neat.
You just walk past him, and he's always just muttering about something or having an argument about something.
He's not very good with his focus, is he?
Trying his best to figure it out, and he's just funny. I mean, I like all the side characters in Horizon, but I think he's like the most realistic in terms of character you meet along the way who suddenly gets introduced to very, very complicated technology, gets really into rock music because he finds the rock music on the Focus, and is just trying to being a regular guy who's been pushed into this, where everyone else is like, yeah, I figured it out. Here, look, I can done it. And he's like, what's happening? And it's just funny to see him like struggle.
I found Limp Biscuit. What is that?
Yes,
what is a Limp
Biscuit? Yeah. That's who I like in games. There's more, but those are the ones I thought I'd bring along. Mm-hmm.
It could be argued that he's actually a protagonist, but Clonk in Ratchet and Clonk.
Right.
He's really good. He can, he's got all sorts of tools on him, so you can hover and use jets and all sorts of other stuff like that.
He can be big.
He can be big.
Yeah. As well.
He can be blue. He can be violet sky as well.
Yeah.
Another one that's a little bit tenuous, but having just played through Disco Elysium, if you pick up the horrible necktie at the start of the game, which is in your room hanging from the ceiling fan, just sort of going round and round, it talks to you.
Of course it does.
As you go through the game, and it's just got this absurd voice where everything it says is completely unhinged. And this game is, most of the dialogue is your inner monologue based on how you've designed your character, and there's always like a million dice being rolled basically according to your stats in terms of whether you pass a check or fail a check, and that's all streamlined into your subconscious, this part of your brain is telling you this or has this insight based on this stat, like you have some encyclopedia skills and you passed this skill check, so here's some insight that your brain's going to tell you. The necktie though is just insane. There's one bit near the start that I did have to save a clip of where someone asks you to do something and the necktie says to you, "That sounds like a responsibility. You don't like those," etc. And it just goes on and on. And I love having the necktie with me because it always says just the most ridiculous stuff. So if that can count as a sidekick, the horrible necktie from Disco Elysium,
sure,
I would say.
Hey, why not?
Elena, Sully, Chloe, all them lot from the Uncharted games are excellent.
Well, we've been sitting
sidekicks.
Here, I thought, oh yeah, Sully. I didn't think to write Sully down, but yeah.
I'm surprised no one mentioned Ellie as well from The Last of Us because I was going to, and I thought that one's really obvious.
Yeah, that's why I didn't bring it.
Yeah,
that's
didn't
why
say
I thought
Ellie
as
for
well.
That reason.
I think just the AI is great. Sometimes she runs directly in front of people and they don't see her, which would be annoying if she was.
You're
seen.
You're crouched behind a barrel and she's just stood next to you, like
climbing over cover.
Yeah.
Around.
But for the most part, she's great. You know, the AI is fantastic and she's really well programmed and designed, not just from a writing and voice acting standpoint. Like, she's actually a very functional sidekick, I would say. And the same goes for the Uncharted characters as well, even though they're not with you all the time. When they are there, the sort of patented Naughty Dog constant dialogue between them really helps develop the characters, and I think that can be annoying and has been done poorly in some recent games that have tried to ape that, but certainly I would say in the Uncharted games they get the balance pretty spot on. So I like those. And finally, a bit more of a tenuous one, excuse me, Pikachu in Pokemon Yellow, who's constantly walking along behind you, so it doesn't feel like you're on an adventure by yourself, which is quite nice. And you can turn around and talk to Pikachu, and depending on how long you've been together, he will either be moody or he will smile at you. It has a little speech bubble that comes up and then a picture of his face.
Yeah.
And that felt far more in line with the super mega popular anime cartoon at the time, in that Ash wasn't just walking around on his own. No. He had people with him, which they couldn't do in this game, but he also had, Pikachu in particular walking along outside of the Pokeball.
Who was recently revealed to, they were planning that he would actually be able to speak like Meowth.
Don't like
from
that.
From the beginning.
I don't like that.
Rather than that one time that he said stuff. But it didn't happen.
Not a fan of that. Well, it's time to move on to something, Ashton.
Yes, it's something new, brand new for this podcast. It's called What we playing?
It's what we play in time. Time to talk about the games, what we have been playing. Peter, what you have been playing?
Bless you, Ashton. Thanks.
Peter, what have you been playing?
I have played... They're actually both games that I've streamed recently, but I've been playing them in my own time as well, in a completely different... well, not entirely. I streamed the movies 2 weeks ago, and in that I was like... I did the beginnings of, the makings of an animated thing that had been written by an AI chatbot, like a script thing. And so after the stream, I was like, that was fun, but I don't want to go back and do that like next week and maybe the week after until I've finally got this thing ready. So I've been doing that just in my own time. And actually, I quite enjoyed it. It was a real, it was a bit of a nostalgia trip because I used to play that game a lot when I was like, I don't know, 13 or something. So that was actually really nice. And now I have uninstalled it and don't think I will ever play it again because I've used pretty much every single interesting action that any of the actors can do. And so now the novelty is immediately worn off because that game doesn't give you enough creative freedom to like mix things up and do things in different, unique ways. It's all just like set little scenes and stuff, and I've used them all. So
I bet it felt limitless when you were a child.
Oh yeah, absolutely, it really did. But now it feels very limited. But then the other thing I have played, so I've been streaming Skyrim. I've done one session of it, and I'm going to do it again next week, all being well. Although I might not be streaming next week, so I don't know. We'll see. But I've been collecting all the bugs in jars. In order to get that working, I had to install a couple of mods, and I ended up just playing Skyrim in an actual new character in my own time for about 3 hours one night this week, and actually enjoyed it. I didn't do the game from the start because it is a very long and tedious opening, and I'm sick to death of specifically like the fact that you're sick of the game, or in the way that you're sick of the game, I'm sick of the opening like half hour. But one of the mods I installed was an alternate start mod where it just like dumps you. You choose like what your backstory is, like I'm camping in the woods or I'm a member of one of the guilds, and it will just like place you there with some items, and you can still then go and start the main quest if you want to. You have to go and like investigate Helgen and find that it's all been burnt down. And then it just sets you off on the main quest. Or you can not do that. Mm-hmm. So I was like, this is great. I don't have to do the tedious execution scene. And I suddenly found myself playing the game. And I'm playing it in pretty much the same way that I've always played it. except I'm just doing a lot more wandering into the wilderness and actually just going in dungeons. Because I didn't do as much of that as I should have done. And that is the thing that I like about the game. I like the environmental storytelling where you go in and there's like a dead body in a house surrounded by spiders, or you go in somewhere and there's like a dog fighting ring and there's loads of dogs in cages and money all over the table. And, you know, all that kind of there's little details that are not even part of any quest. They've been built by someone who's made a dungeon. So that's what I've been doing. I've just been enjoying a bit of Skyrim, surprisingly. I'll probably keep playing it for another couple of weeks, and then I will probably stop playing it for another
several years
maybe. Never go back ever again because we'll have Starfield and
Elder Scrolls
and that's
maybe
great
even
now.
Elder Scrolls 6
any day now.
My stream games essentially is what I've been playing, but for fun, because that's how boring I am. Ashton, what have you been playing for fun?
I've been playing a few things for fun. Sunday I spent pretty much all day from about 9 a.m till about 10 o'clock in the evening playing modded Minecraft again. All day playing Vault Hunters mod with a cat sat on my lap and a glass of gin. Best day ever.
Nice.
And then me and MB have started playing Division 2. We were just looking for a game to play together, and he point blank refuses to play Gotham Knights.
I was going
to
say, Gotham Knights is like the Division 2, but with superheroes. Yeah. I don't know what you're doing.
So we're playing Division 2, which we played like the demo of like a few years ago when they gave like the first hour demo or whatever. and we both had forgotten. So we started, we're like, why are we level 4? What's going on? And then we realized that we'd played before. I'm really enjoying it because it's mindless, like, run here, do this, run here, do this. And I like that sometimes, just want to run here, do this. Mm-hmm. He's already bored, I think, but he says, oh, we can keep playing it if you want. And I'm like, you don't have the ball, I'll just play on my own if you don't want to play it. And the other thing I've been playing, which I picked up last night and played for a few hours, is Resident Evil 3 Remake. I played the second one a few years ago, and I meant to play the third one, but just never got around to it. And that game is hard. I don't know if I just got stuck where, like, I was just in a situation where I was basically just dying over and over again. But Nemesis kicked my ass, like, multiple times in, like, the very kind of first area after you, like, get into the main story. And I was trying to turn the subway station power back on. And after I'd done that and set everything back up, I was just trying to get back to the subway station. And he was just kicking my ass. Like, you come out of the room and you go kind of up these stairs. And he was just following me, just punching me in the back of the head. And every time I got up, he'd just punch me again.
I do remember a few occasions where, yeah.
Yeah, and I was like, oh my, I was like getting so actually angry. And I was like, I'm turning it off. I'm not playing this game anymore. I'm turning it off. If I don't do it this time, I'm not playing it ever again. And I was like stood in this little room that you could get into at the top of the stairs. And I had like barely any health. I had no health things left, and he was just standing outside the window of this shop just staring at me, and I was like, oh, I don't want to go out there, he's gonna kill me. And then I escaped into this like corridor like thing, and I thought, oh cool, I'm not that far away now. And then he just jumps and lands right in front of me and just punches me in the head and kills me. And I was like, oh, I was fuming, and I couldn't go anywhere because there was a cat asleep on me, so I was stuck anyway. So I was like, I'm just going to keep playing it. And I managed to get through to like the sewers, but I almost just turned the game off and didn't play it again because he was just the worst. And it's definitely a lot harder than two. So much so that I was going through and it was like, would you like to turn on assisted mode? And I was like, no, I don't want to turn on assisted mode. So that's what I've been playing. Maybe I'll play some more, but maybe I'll just get so angry I'll never play again. But Nemesis is really hard.
Yeah, I've not played that game since it first came out, but actually thinking about it, it was pretty tough. I can think of multiple occasions now where I was like, yeah, getting, you know, just going over and over again in the same loop.
Yeah.
To life.
There was only one bit I think that I really, really struggled with that stood out for me. And I can't remember if we were playing it on stream or not. Did you do a solo stream on Resi 3 when it came out?
I feel we like you
there
was
streamed
a stream, whether it was solo or joint, I don't remember.
Okay.
But
well, when I was playing it, there's a bit, and I won't spoil it because you will get there, where you're playing as someone, and you're in a room and you basically just have to survive a load of zombies who are pouring in. It's a bit like Call of Duty zombies almost, that bit, where you've just got to survive for an amount of time. And I died like 4 or 5 times on that, and I was just not having fun, and there were bad checkpoints. You had to do it from the very start. But I really liked Resi 3. I think we said at the time on the podcast, etc., that it's not as good as Resi 2 Remake, but not necessarily because they did a worse job. It's just that Resi 3 is not as good as Resi 2. Mm. The game they remade is not as good. But
if they'd only released Resi 3 and Resi 2 didn't exist, everyone would be like, this is amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But by comparison, it's not so good. It was a solo stream, by the way, I've remembered.
Okay.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that's what I've been playing this week. What have you been playing?
I have been playing an awful lot of WWE 2K23, which we'll be talking about in Review Corner in a moment. But other than that, I finished Gears of War 4 in co-op. And I don't like that one as much as the original trilogy. I don't think that's a controversial opinion. But it's just, I had almost no connection to the characters. I don't really find myself that invested or caring about Kate's story. And clearly she's been pushed as sort of the primary driving force of this new trilogy, assuming we get a sixth one at some point. And I know that I started it over a month ago and then only came back to it over the weekend, just gone. But I thought it ended really abruptly and weirdly. Like, I thought when I got to the end of this mission that it was just, we were then just going to keep playing afterwards, but then the credits rolled.
Right.
And I was like, what? That's the end.
You had that about
like
something else
weird
recently.
Weird mid-level break. I can't remember.
No, I can't remember.
We heard it with Callisto Protocol.
Oh, that's true, yeah. All right. Maybe that's what I was thinking of.
Yeah, it just, the ending was, I don't know, it felt like it aped something that was done in the first trilogy, but not as well. And that reveal was like mid-game that then drove this sort of revenge narrative for the remainder of that game. Whereas this one, it was like, oh, this makes me so cross, credits.
Right.
Like, oh, all right. So I will play Gears 5, which by all accounts is better than Gears 4. But that game, releasing when it was, definitely, and especially playing it now, but I imagine even then, feels like a game out of time. Like it feels like a game from 15 years ago, you know, when the original, it feels a lot like the original trilogy, which is no bad thing, but I just feel like games have come a really long way since then. Mm. And while I'd be well up for a Gears game now, the little bit of Gears 5 I played with James Jacobs when we covered it on Quipscope all those years ago, I was like, this feels like I'm playing an Xbox 360 game. It doesn't look like one, but it fit like it plays like a game from a long time ago. So I'm not sure if I'll enjoy Gears 5 either, but as I said, it's meant to be better than Gears 4. So onwards and upwards, as they say. And that's all I have played.
Okay.
But it's time to hop over to the review corner and talk about WWE 2K23.
Oh, isn't that nice? Well, hello and welcome to this review corner.
Ooh.
If things sound slightly different, it's because we're in a different room now.
But yes.
Sure, it's fine. We're just rolling with it. Ben, hello. You have been playing a game this week.
I have. It is WWE 2K23.
Yes.
Which, as of the release of this podcast, is now available. And people can play it if they want. But I've had it for about a week and I've been playing the ever flipping flip out of it, trying to think of another word in place of a swear. All I've got is flip, and I've really enjoyed it.
Good.
And I know I'm biased because I like wrestling.
Yeah.
Although a non-wrestling fan probably wouldn't play WWE 2K23.
No, probably not.
Let's be real. But on the whole, they're getting there.
Yeah.
Like last year, in fact, no, that's not even fair. Last year they were getting there, rebuilding after the disastrous 2K20.
I was going to ask you, because we spoke about last year's one together, and there was a lot of changes made last year to make it better than the year before.
Yes.
And I assume that they've built on that and made it even better over?
They have. Essentially, we're going to deep dive on some aspects of it momentarily, but essentially the takeaway headline is that last year they had to rebuild, and this year they've managed to build upon those foundations. Mm-hmm. So they've basically settled into a groove now of what they want out of this series, and they're focusing more on just making the bits that are good better, which is a good place to be in. And I'm very optimistic now for the future of the series, because they could have just scrapped it all and started from scratch again this year.
Mm.
But the control scheme is basically the same, which was a very accessible version of what came before. So you've got your light combos and your heavy combos. You always start by pressing square to do a punch, a light punch. And then you can grapple with circle, and there are more complex controls for people who want to do more complicated things, like grab people by the scruff of their neck and walk them around the ring, or lift people up for sort of more manual attacks rather than specific moves that are already in there. So in terms of returning players, not knowing what to expect, it's going to play the same as last year.
Yeah.
Which is good.
And has it got the same game modes that it had last year? Because it wasn't there like four last year.
Yes, it had bloody loads last year, and they've all returned. So there's Showcase mode, which this year follows John Cena, who's on the cover. There's My Rise, which is the career mode. There's My Faction, which is the card-based mode, sort of like FIFA Ultimate Team.
Yeah.
My GM, where you run the show and you have a budget and you have to, you know, book different wrestlers on your roster in storylines and so on. And then there's there's WWE Universe mode, where you can basically just do whatever you want, like you can create entire new shows if you want to. And the big new addition, game mode wise, or I say match type wise is more accurate, is the addition of War Games, which is a match that sort of returned to prominence on WWE TV in the past couple of years or so.
Mm-hmm.
And it's two rings next to it. In fact, we got one for... In the
Tatapeel.
In the Tatapeel. We got a toy version.
Yes, I remember.
So it's two rings with a steel cage around it. It's complete chaos. I think it works really well. But diving into the different modes. Showcase mode is about John Cena, but instead of playing through John Cena's most famous matches, you play through some of his most famous defeats, and you play as the person who beat John Cena, because Cena is trying to get his wins back, basically. That's how it's presented. And like last year, it sort of melds real footage of the match with animated bits in-engine, so it sort of like transitions between them. And we'll give you basic prompts like throw John Cena into the ring apron on the outside of the ring, and then it will trigger the next bit that comes along. It's a nice little package. Mm-hmm. Last year, though, it was about Rey Mysterio, and Rey actually, as well as doing sort of talking head bits between the matches, he would narrate what was going on periodically, say, and then he punched me right in the face, yeah, or something like that. Yeah. This year, though, John Cena doesn't say anything during the matches.
Good.
There's no commentary team. There's just sort of like generic music that plays throughout. So it feels like weirdly like, I know John Cena's probably extremely busy,
yeah,
but there's huge long stretches where there's no talking whatsoever.
It's like he's just sent his likeness and he was like, what more do you want?
He's just gone. He's done bits to camera for in between the matches, but that's it. So that was a bit of a shame. Mm. I felt like that could have been polished up a bit more, but, you know, it is the same mode as last year. Big improvements, though, to My Rise, the career mode, because in last year's one, they rebooted it slightly because 2K20 and 2K19, they had these sort of linear storylines that were kind of mental. And then last year, they had this, I didn't like it at all, sort of like it was driven by the in-game social media feed.
Right.
And you would just, there would be exclamation marks or whatever next to certain tweets or posts. And if you clicked on one, you would enter a story, which largely would play out over social media. And then you'd just be loading into a meaningless match.
Right.
Sometimes there'd be some stories where there were, you know, there was narration and actual cutscenes and stuff, but they were few and far between. It was a bit disjointed and a bit naff. Mm. The social media stuff has returned this year, but there is an actual story that goes, that has a beginning and an end, like that runs across the entire thing.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
The story mode actually has an ending this time. And the stuff that takes place on social media is usually sort of like B stories that you don't have to do. They're kind of optional ones, and you get extra attribute points as a reward that you can use to upgrade your person. There's a male and a female one once again. The male one is called The Lock, where you're a well-traveled international independent wrestling sensation who gets signed by WWE.
Right.
But you get immediately saddled with like a terrible character. You're called The Lock because you're the future of the industry or something, and you have to wear this gear that's got like a padlock on it, and there's a safe that
like
you come out
of. Like a chastity belt.
Sure. Sure. You sort of, it's your story of having to like emerge from that, break free from that character and forge your own destiny, as it were. And the female one, you are the niece of a WWE Hall of Famer. And you've got sort of, it's again a similar story, but this time you're trying to get out from under her shadow.
Right.
And forge your own legacy, basically.
Okay.
Both are pretty good. And I think they're huge steps up from last year's version. And if this is what they're going to go with going forwards, obviously the story's going to change every year. And I can only hope that they make it as wacky and insane as 2K20, because as ridiculous and broken as that game was, I thought the My Rise mode was actually very entertaining because it was so stupid. And I enjoy that stuff. My faction, the card mode, not for me at all. You log in, you get your dailies, you get your rewards. There's like three different currencies. Some people really love this mode and they have made a lot of improvements to it. I think presentation-wise, it's a lot better than it was last year. Having your team of four guys and four girls, you know, when you win your match, they're all there celebrating together. You want to collect the cards that represent your favorite wrestlers, for example. And now you can play online as well. So they've added lots of stuff to that if you're interested in that. My GM as well has also seen improvements. Last year, they didn't have the mid-card titles, so you're talking your Intercontinental and United States Championships.
Of course.
And even the tag belts weren't in it last year, but they are now. You can also have up to four general managers competing at a time, all taking turns to book their shows. So there's a lot more. Again, they've just sort of been building on what they started last year. Universe mode is universe mode. I don't really know if they change much year to year, but there are diehards who love this mode because they can just create their own universe, literally. They can make entirely new shows, create arenas for it and everything. And so that's all there. And as I said, War Games is super duper fun. I've been playing a flipping load of this. I think it looks really good. Mm-hmm. I don't think it visually is any better than last year, but last year was a huge step up from before. Mm-hmm. It's very stable as well. No crashes for me. A lot of load screens, which on the whole are a lot faster than I think last year's game. But especially in My Rise, you are constantly in loading screens.
That's a shame.
And that is very tedious. So hopefully they can sort
those
that stuff out.
Yeah,
or just maybe limit the need for them sometimes.
Yeah.
Maybe just streamline that experience a bit. But a big old recommend for me.
Good.
I wrote the review for Push Square and I gave it an 8. And I think it's on like an 84 on Metacritic or something. So huge improvement.
Yeah.
Really, really good. I very much recommend it if you're a wrestling fan. And I think you should give it a play. I'm streaming it as well. So come watch my streams.
Cool. Well, thanks, Ben.
You're welcome.
Should we go back to the Losers Doing the Regular Podcast?
Beg your pardon?
Should we go back to the Losers Doing the Regular Podcast?
In the non-echoey room?
Yeah.
All right, let's go.
It's time for question two now. The question two comes from Callum Story. Hey, BAP, do you see it as a sign of poor game design if a game can't be completed without using an online guide? Or is this community aspect an accepted and or intentional aspect of some games? Thanks, Callum.
Thanks, Callum.
Thank you, Callum.
Yes, I do. I do see it as a sign of poor game design if a game can't be completed without using an online guide. No game should only be completable with an online guide, I think.
Mm.
Is that a controversial opinion?
I agree.
I think it varies.
I think
in a very few specific instances.
I can think of one game that where I've had to use online resources, and I don't think that that's a bad thing, which was Minecraft, because it doesn't tell you how to craft stuff. You don't know that.
Sorry, I dropped my phone.
You
dropped
your phone. You don't. No one flipping knows how to make a gate in Minecraft, or not the first time anyway. So you have to go to the Minecraft wiki or something and look it up, and that's fine. But that's different, really. That's not using a guide to complete a game. But other than that, I can't really think of instances where I think it's okay. If we're talking about completion, like platinuming a game.
Yeah.
And like having to do some really hard, either optional stuff or not even optional stuff that's like listed in game, like, oh, here's a very difficult arena, but like just how to farm like 1,000 items, then here's a guide that tells you the most efficient way to do that. That's a bit different. But if we're talking about like the main beats of a game requiring an online guide for some reason, then that just seems like it's been made too difficult. Perhaps Soulsborne players use online guides, and that is one where, yeah, maybe it would work because you play those games for that difficulty. But I don't know. I think like this kind of stuff should be at least available in game in some way, even if you have to like go out of your way and find like notes that have weaknesses of enemies on there or something, like, you know, actually like implement it into the universe rather than require you to pause the game, pull out your phone and start Googling. Like that just seems, I don't know, that seems bad to me.
I agree. I think that if I can't get past like a section of the game because I can't figure out where to go or a puzzle is just objectively too hard, then I think that's poor game design. If you've not got, you know, I'm not a big fan of the yellow paint means you can go this way thing. However, if you are going to put me in a room and say, get out of the room and not tell me what I can interact with or like jump on or whatever, then that is poor game design. If there's no like even slight subtle clues or no previous like game like information that tells me that I could do that, then I think it's bad game design. However, I do appreciate that for some games, helping each other out is kind of part of the experience, like the notes and stuff you can leave in like Elden Ring. You can leave little things, can't you?
Mm.
And then like things like Death Stranding, where you can leave a ladder in a convenient place that someone can then get up off the ladder or something along those lines. Whatever you do in that game, I literally have no idea. So I think that there's like certain elements where it's like, yeah, it's a community thing. But if you're like being like, oh, they'll all have to work together to figure this one out, then no. I don't want to have to talk to other people. I don't want to have to go on a forum, find out the information that way. I want to just be able to just figure it out myself. I only ever go on a guide if it's like really like I'm frustrated that I can't figure it out and or I'm tired. Like when I play Professor Layton on the Metro, sometimes Sometimes I do search up a puzzle because I'm confused by the puzzle, what it's asking me. And 8 out of 10 times, it's my fault because I've read the question wrong. And then I'm like, oh, cool. I was doing the right thing. I just was looking for the opposite. So I do sometimes go for a guide. But if I have to search for a guide, it's normally because I'm annoyed that I can't figure it out myself. And I don't like the feeling of feeling stupid for not being able to figure it out. So I don't really like having to search for guides. But I know that some games, they're like force you to. But I think it's poor game design if I have to search for a guide because you've not provided me any resources to figure it out myself.
I broadly agree. However, I think it depends on the game. I think it depends on the player as well. Because as you've just described, Ashton, everybody is going to have different abilities when it comes to certain games, certain puzzles, certain challenges, that kind of stuff. I don't think a game like... Well, for example, if you put me with my level of patience for puzzle games and for point-and-click adventure games in a Broken Sword or a Tales from Monkey Island, it's probably not going to be too long before I get really frustrated and wound up and end up just Googling something. Mm. I don't see that as a failure of the game, though, because that's what the game is meant to be. And for some people who are dialed in, they will know exactly what they have to do, or they will genuinely relish trying to work out what it is. Whereas my patience and my time is limited, and I'm an idiot, and I can't be asked. From Software games, of course, are going to be the example that I'm going to lean on here, because those games are so hard to get into because they all have their own language. Like, there'll be an item that serves the same function in every single one of their games. Excuse me. For example, the Estus flask, which heals you, but it'll have a different name in every single one. Mm. And returning players will know exactly what that is and how that functions, even though it's got a different name. And they'll be able to talk to other players and know, oh, this is the analog for that from that game. Whereas new players coming in, I'm not going to have any flipping clue. There's a built-in, while it does give you some crash course at the start, there's a built-in expectation for players to work it out themselves or have prior knowledge. And that's not that could be described as poor game design. And when Elden Ring came out last year, we were talking about how a number of developers from across the sort of AAA sphere were very vocally critical of all the love and acclaim that Elden Ring was getting because they were coming from backgrounds where they had to develop like Ubisoft maps and stuff where everything was really clear and explained and laid out. And they were like, understandably, they said, this is not accessible. I don't understand why this is getting so much praise when we'd get absolutely destroyed if we did something similar. But I think they, From Software, are fortunate and in that they sort of exist in their own sphere out of the norm. And I feel like certain puzzle games, certain FromSoft games certainly are allowed to be more obtuse, and some players are going to work it out. Clearly, someone's got to work it out to then tell other people how to do it. But for a lot of people, they're gonna struggle, and they're going to have to Google it. And I suppose it's down to your own definition of what poor game design would be, because I feel like a lot of the mystique of some of certainly the more obscure quest lines you can do in FromSoft games would be ruined if it was really obvious what you had to do. Yeah. Like, take this strange item you pick up in this corner of the map to here and you'll get a special event will happen. It's like, how is anyone supposed to figure that out? But that's kind of the unique charm of those games.
But I would say that, like, if there's a certain... Because I always get annoyed when I feel like I've missed out on something because I've not been told about it. Like Peter said, if there's, like, a note that says, I took this over... Like, even if it's not in the same location, if you find a, like... Deathloop, for example, you find, like, a thing that's in one area that talks about something that's in, like, another area, another time of the day, and it's up to you whether you've, like, taken that piece of information and gone, oh, let me go and do that. But you don't have to. You can miss that. But the thing that annoys me is when they're like, oh, if you take the egg to the podium that's really far away and not marked on any map or anything, guess what? You get a dragon. I'll be like, well, why didn't no one tell me that? Like, why would you put that in the game and not even give me a little hint to go there to get dragon?
From Software game would give you a hint, but it would be weird, obscure, and if you're not, if you come to that location during the daytime, that NPC won't be there.
Yeah.
You know, it'll be something really weird, and I can understand how that would be frustrating, but I don't think sort of like a blanket rule necessarily applies. If I'm playing Call of Duty and I run down a corridor and then and I'm shooting people, and then a puzzle appears that is absolutely baffling because I didn't pick up the flipping flashbang grenade from this room in a previous level, then yeah, that would be bad. But that's because that's not what you expect from those games. I think some games, you're gonna struggle, and that's sort of by their design. But at the same time, you could call that poor game design if you then go in and try and play that for the first time and bounce off it because it's complete gibberish to you. I would understand that.
Well, also to the point of like how it affects specific players, I agree that that in itself is not poor game design. If I play a Monkey Island game and I personally struggle with a puzzle because I'm not like wired for those kinds of puzzles, I don't think that's poor game design. But the question says if a game can't be completed without using an online guide. So I think rather than like specific players struggling with specific things, it's like if a game has specifically been designed to be so obtuse that you almost nobody can complete it without like kind of community effort and like working all out together, then, you know, I think that is where it could be called poor game design.
In that instance, yes, I would say.
On the other hand, though,
it can't be.
That's slightly different to if there's a sort of conspiracy, like a gaming, like sometimes online communities come together because they're working out this like really like strange, subtle thing that the developers have hidden in there.
Demon's Souls Remake with the coins that they added.
Yeah, exactly.
Secret
and like
door.
GTA have done things like that. And yeah, various games have done it. And that's a different thing entirely. If people are coming together to work out something in an interesting kind of riddle, almost scavenger hunt kind of thing, then that's interesting. And that's like how you drive community engagement. But yeah, so there's a subtle difference there.
It's time for something a bit strange, Peter.
It is. It's time for news that is weird. It's weird news.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
It's weird news time. Time for some weird video game news. If you want to submit some weird video game news to us, then you can leave it in a comment or a reply on Twitter, on Facebook and Twitter, under the post that goes out near the start of the week. And you'll get a shout out and you'll get your news read too. But if you want to guarantee a shout out at this point in the show, you can go to patreon.com/teamtriplejump and become a producer, a podcast producer. And here are the podcast producers for this week.
We've got Nathan.
G.Y. Goliath.
Nexus Polaris.
Duncan Wilson.
Blake Thomas.
Ellie Nicholas.
Nicole Hansen.
Melody L. Bonnet.
Katie Garrett.
And Gabrielle Philippink.
Thank you, podcast producers. You got some weird news,
Peter.
Good
morning, everyone.
Yeah, this was submitted by Sean Austin. No relation. Well, might be. I don't know. It's from 8 days ago. I saw this last week and I nearly brought it, but I was like, it's kind of video game adjacent. It's not really video game related. So not only is this not particularly video game related, it's also over a week old, but there wasn't that much weird news this week. So thank you, Sean, for sending this in. In the year of our Lord 2023, Chuck E. Cheese still uses floppy disks to make the animatronic mouse dance. Brilliant. This is according to PCGamer.com, written by Rich Stanton. Get a pizza this.
Oh!
Very good.
Yeah. Chuck E. Cheese's Pizza Time Theater is a chain that has its origins in video games. It was the passion project of Atari co-founder Nolan Bushnell, who, flush with success in the 1970s, saw the opportunity to get his concept for a family-friendly restaurant that was also an amusement venue off the ground. It served pizza because, in Bushnell's words, There were very few components and not too many ways to screw it up. And the centerpiece of the restaurants would become animatronic shows starring a coyote. Except when Bushnell bought the first costume, it turned out to be for a rat. Wiser heads persuaded Bushnell not to call the chain Rick Rat's Pizza, and thus Chuck E. Cheese was born. A lot of backstory there.
I didn't know that any of this was true, so I'm glad that I found out so much more.
I'm going to skip ahead because it's taken a while. The animatronic element of Chuck E. Cheese is a weird old thing. I've only seen it once, and that was quite enough. Slightly moth-bitten and gaudy. These days, the chain has decided the rat's now a trendy mouse, but in some ways, it remains old school. In a recent viral TikTok via Ars Technica, a Chuck E. Cheese employee called Stephen Coonrod shows how these animatronics are made to dance using floppy disks. Coonrod shows off the 3.5-inch floppy disk, which holds up to 1.44 megabytes of data.
Whoa.
And is branded with the Chuck E. Cheese logo and a Chuck E. Cheese Evergreen Show 2023 stamp before loading it into a large computer bank, a CyberStar rack mount system.
Whoa.
PCGamer.com.
They know.
Connected to both the floppy drive and various DVD players. Not all Chuck E. Cheese locations still use floppies, less than 50 of the restaurants of over 600 worldwide. But for those that do, the programs are written in-house and contain the dance routines for the animatronic animals and are accompanied by DVDs which play the light show, background visuals, and music around them. The particular setup in Coonrod's location is called Studio C, and it features one animatronic accompanied by four screens and is 25 years old.
Mm.
Wow. There's more to it, but I think we've got the gist.
Tell us more about that rack system.
Yeah, oh, well, it's got... No, I don't know. It didn't say. Because they assume that everyone on PC Gamer knows about the mount rack.
Yeah, I mean, I understood it, so...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fully.
I didn't. I was a bit too young for floppy disks.
Yeah.
God, I used to take Have you ever used a floppy disk to school?
The other day, well, I was watching Buffy the Vampire, and they, like, have... Obviously, that's set in 1998. And at one point, a teacher got a floppy disk out of a PC. And I was like, wow.
What is that? What is that? Like, it's a save button.
My brain was like, wow, that's a floppy disk.
Yeah, and 3D printed like, a save button.
Yeah.
Yeah. But no, I've never used a floppy disk. Actually, probably have when I was really young, but not for a while. I have a bit of weird news.
Yeah.
I forgot to write down who it's come from.
Oh, so bloody
I'll look
hell.
While Ben's doing his. It's written by Renata Price on Vice. The list, nice. There is an advert that will literally not get out of the way. Thank you.
What was it for?
Oakley.
What is that?
I think it's glasses.
Oh, okay.
The list of official Olympic esports games is extremely weird. The competitive tic-tac-bow scene finally gets the spotlight. On Wednesday, the International Olympics Committee announced that the Olympics will be holding an official esports series this year. Qualifiers have already begun and will culminate in live in-person finals at the first ever Olympic esports week held in Singapore late June. At first glance, I know this is particularly surprising if you've been paying attention to the trajectory of esports in recent years. It's become increasingly popular and their inclusion in the Olympics has been debated for a while. However, the obscure assortment of games chosen for the event, some of which are pay-to-win mobile games or only available on an indie console, are mind-boggling to anyone familiar with esports, which is a space led by games like League of Legends, thank you, well, Call of Duty and Overwatch.
Can I just say...
Yes.
There are some ancient Greeks somewhere who are rolling in their graves.
Yeah.
Free-to-play mobile games at the official Olympics.
Pay-to-win. Yep.
Pay-to-win.
Free-to-play mobile games.
Yeah.
Smells a bit like corruption.
Yes. Here we go. There are, of course, some reasonable choices. Chess, hosted by chess.com, for example. People love chess and been playing it for hundreds of years. Additionally, chess.com has spent a lot of time and money trying to invest in chess as an esport. If it was like a pretty natural pick for an event like this, racing title Gran Turismo, while a bit of a surprising choice, is at the very least a recognisable brand to many people. Additionally, as a digital version of motorsports, Gran Turismo is relatively readable to an audience more familiar with volleyball and rowing than League of Legends and Counter-Strike.
That's true.
Why aren't they playing the Olympics video game?
Yeah.
Such a good question.
Mario and Sonic.
Finally, Just Dance, which only feels reasonable on account of its popularity, despite the fact that it seems like a bad sport to watch. The other games chosen for the Olympic Esports Week will only be familiar to obscure mobile game enthusiasts and those who follow the international federations governing their favourite sports very closely. Virtual versions of archery, baseball, cycling, sailing, taekwondo and tennis round out the series, with each game being a more confusing choice than the last. Archery is represented by Tic Tac Bow, a game created by Refract Technologies, a Singapore-based studio, and published by Project 99. It's also worth noting that Refract Technologies' founder is an active commission member of the Global Esports Federation.
Oh, weird.
Right.
The game does what it says on the tin, combining archery with a classic children's game, Tic Tac Toe, and was released in late February of this year. So far, only 150 downloads.
Oh, no.
It is also affiliated with the World Archery Federation, the International Olympic Committee's recognised archery federation. And honestly, stick with me here, it just gets weirder.
That's dodgy.
Can I just say quickly, though, that there shouldn't be any party games, especially motion control party games like Just Dance, involved, because it doesn't matter how good you are at dancing. You are entirely limited by the technology's ability to capture your dancing. Mm-hmm. And at that point, you might as well just have a bloody dancing competition.
Also, isn't Just Dance hypothetically, like, if you just did a perfect dance, you would just get full points? And if this is like the very best Just Dance players from around the world, are they not all just going to get...
They'll just know exactly which movements.
Yeah. And I bet they won't be... perfect move.
They won't be dancing... They won't be doing the right dance either. They'll just... They'll work out which arm movements to do for each gesture.
They're not going to be getting into it, are they? They'll just be... Yeah.
It'll be robotic.
It'll be the kind of person that annoys my mum when she's really trying and then someone's just wibbling their hand around and they get more points. Refact Technologies is also the developer for Virtual Taekwondo, a flagship game for the Axis, the motion-controlled base console which the company successfully kickstarted in 2018. The game uses motion tracking technology to translate real-world body movements into the game, allowing for no-contact virtual sparring. Representing baseball is WBSC's eBaseball Power Pros, which is available on PS5 and Nintendo Switch for the strangely low 99 cents. The World Baseball and Softball Confederation have partnered with Konami, this much malignant publisher behind Metal Gear Solid and Silent Hill for the game. Z-Wift and...
Malignant publisher.
Maligned.
Maligned.
Did I say malignant? Sorry.
That's all right.
I just auto-corrected it. Z-Swift and Virtual Regatta, virtual version of cycling and sailing respectively, are relatively popular translations of their relative sports. The same cannot be said for Tennis Crash, a mobile game... Tennis Clash, sorry. A mobile game produced by Wildlife Studios, a massive mobile developer, which has a reputation for intense pay-to-win microtransactions. Product reviews across various app store sites, sudden unpredictable changes in game balance from update to update, which can be alleviated by simply spending more money on the game. They are in no way the games chosen are in no way representative of what most people imagine when they think of esports, but they are oddly representative of the current state of games as a business. The breadth of a display is really something to marvel at, ranging from prestige AAA sports games to predatory mobile games and obscure enthusiast products. The only consistency between them being their connection to governing bodies of their respective sports.
That's going to be terrible, isn't it?
Tasty corruption there. And also, can't wait to watch.
Yeah, I won't be watching.
No.
Sounds like that couldn't have been organised worse.
Mm-hmm.
Fun. My weird news comes from Comroy on Twitter and also Matthew of Botchamania, who we work with, who sent it to me in a DM. This comes from PC Gamer and is written by Jody McGregor. Roller Coaster Tycoon 2 track takes longer to complete than the universe will exist.
Goodness.
Nice.
Theme park management sim and vomit-soaked hellscape creation tool Roller Coaster Tycoon 2 has played host to some real horror shows. Streamer Marcel Voss is responsible for many of them, having built record-setting tracks like the nightmarish one that takes 12 real years to complete, which I feel like we may have covered on Weird News before.
It sounds familiar. Mm-hmm.
His latest work puts that in perspective. It takes over 3 quinvigintillion years to complete. A quinvigintillion is a 1 with 78 zeros after it. Voss calls it the universe coaster, and it's not exactly a thrill a minute. As his 14-minute video explains via Kotaku, it begins with a looping coaster that runs along a long spiral track at a speed of about 1 kilometer per hour. That's roughly 1/5 or 1/6 of walking speed, just to put that into context for people who aren't really sure. The track ends in nothing, though there is a decorative skeleton in a top hat, but the coaster doesn't crash at this dead end. Thanks to a slight incline cleverly placed near the at the start of the track, which the coaster reverses onto before it descends, RCT2, Roller Coaster Tycoon 2, acts as if the coaster still has a winch attached when it reaches the dead end, as it must have had to back up that incline. It's not only prevented from crashing by this invisible winch, but pulled all the way back along the track by it at its slowest possible speed. This is really wordy and hard to read out. But basically, you will, if you do it, you're going to be on there for the rest of your natural life and several other natural lives as well. And I think he also managed to make it so that it's not a ridiculous file size, so you can technically import it into an original version of Roller Coaster Tycoon 2 and run it.
I watched the video, and he said there are ways to make much longer rides in like Open RCT, which is like a kind of a modded like open source thing. But he said his one will actually work in the original version of the game.
Yeah,
and there was a lot more to it as well, where he had all these like little mouse rides next to it that they have to go around once to like trigger the one next to it to start. And then like that one has to go around twice to trigger the one next to it to start. And they're all like chained together like that, so that like the one at the very end of this chain has to wait for the one at the start to go around like hundreds and hundreds of times before it has a knock-on effect. And yeah, somehow you can like sync adjacent rides up with each other so that when one of them finishes a lap, the next one starts its first lap. Mm. And that's how he was able to just multiply it 72 to the power of, I don't know, it's crazy. Yeah. It's unbelievable.
Ridiculous.
My news, by the way, came from Colby Knee Deep Dalzio on Twitter. Thank you, Colby.
And that was weird news. Time for question three.
Amazing. Thank you. So this is from Moonstone Studios, who says, hello, Bap.
Hello.
While playing the Resident Evil 4 remake chainsaw demo, I was pleasantly surprised to see Capcom portrayed Leon using his pistol correctly in regards to loading and reloading. If you completely empty the magazine before reloading, Leon will have to chamber the first bullet. Consequently, if you reload before that happens, a +1 appears under the ammo count, reflecting the bullet that was still in the chamber ready to be fired. Is this ultimately a stupid minor detail? Yes, but that's how those types of guns work, and I can count on one hand the number of games that get this right. Do any of you have any similar things that aren't really that big a deal, but you're glad when you see it in a game? Thank you, Moonstone Studios.
Thank you, Moonstone Studios.
I couldn't think of... I know that I've seen things like that that are like really subtle that I'm like, yes, I really approve of that tiny detail. I remember actually in Haven Call of the King, which let's remember is a PS2 game from like the early noughties. When it starts raining, if you're standing still, he'll just put his hood up and then he'll carry on walking, which for the time is like, no one was doing that. That's just a really minor detail. But yeah, I couldn't really think of any that are like really like a fine detail like that. But I do like when in Star Wars games you get marks on the wall when you, if you move around and your lightsaber just like catches a wall, it leaves a burn mark. And you would kind of expect that nowadays in modern gaming. But again, to go back to, I don't know exactly what year we're talking, but like the Jedi Outcast, Jedi Academy games with Carl Katarn, those were, for the time, I think it was quite interesting to see that would happen. If you like scuffed the wall with your saber, it would leave a burn mark. It was like, oh wow, okay. That's like, they really put some thought into that. So yeah, I like things like that. Generally just sort of destructible objects. And when you go into a room and things on a table can be like swooshed off, swept off, or like knocked around, things that have movement and physics to them. It's something that does happen nowadays, of course, but in a lot of games that are considered, you know, absolutely top quality, it doesn't happen. You know, you play something like The Last of Us Part 2, and you walk into a room, everything is very much fixed in place. So whenever I see just a more believable physics system, that's something that I really appreciate. It's not really comparable to the way the gun has been represented in Resident Evil 4, but yeah, that is something relatively minor that I actually get a lot out of. Ashton?
I also, mine are not like quite as small as a gun being reloaded is accurate, but I love Love it when there's a bit of like actual footage, like filmed of real people in a video game. I really liked it when it was in the intro to Rosie. That sort of reminds me of it. And I really like it when it's in Control and there's like that doctor who's doing all the videos. I love it. 10 out of 10. Every time I see it, it makes me happy. I don't know why. I just really like it. Also, things I like are when I do something in a game, and I think I said this before, and it like, so it actually affects the world that I'm in. Like, for example, in Horizon Zero, Forbidden West, when you do one of the quests, an area which is like covered in like dying plants starts to turn green and healthy and everything comes back to life and it affects both your map and the actual game itself. Love that. Mm, perfect. Mm-mm-mm. Also, really like it when in games where there's like a radio or like a TV system, when they talk about things that I've done in the game. Like, yeah, if I've committed a big crime.
Are you going to talk about Saints Row, Ashton?
No, I was going to talk about Cyberpunk.
Oh, okay.
And it others. In Saints Row it does well. Happen in Saints
Spider-Man
Row.
Spider-Man as well.
Spider-Man as well, exactly. It'll be like, there was a big shootout at the saloon the other day. And I'm like, yeah, I was there. That was me. I did that. And I just love
Mom,
when like...
I'm on the radio.
Yeah, exactly. And I like when I'm just driving around in my car off to do something and the news reporter is talking about something that's happened or that I've been involved in. I love that. I love when that happens. And it makes me really sad when I play games where like I'll have done something. Like even Mafia that I've been playing recently, if you do certain missions, they'll be like, the senator was assassinated. And they're like, ah, I assassinated them. That was me. And I just love it. It's not like a big detail. It's like really small and most people probably wouldn't notice. But I just love it. Whenever it happens, I just get so excited that I'm like, oh my God, they're talking about me. That's what I did. Just love it.
Similarly, I like in games by, for example, Obsidian, Fallout New Vegas, or The Outer Worlds, when you do some kind of quest, excuse me, that involves someone or references someone, and either you side with a different person or come to a different outcome, you can then go back and talk to the other person, assuming they're still alive, and they will have something to say about it. They might even treat you differently. I'm not talking just sort of general morality systems and, oh, this group of people will remember your decision. I mean, like, you asked me to go get this thing, and I may have gone about it in a weird way, or I might not have got it for you at all. And then you go back. You don't have to. The quest could be completed, for example, by giving it to someone else. But you could still go and talk to them, and they wouldn't just treat you as if that quest hadn't happened.
They'd be sure, it was nice of you to give that to someone else.
Exactly. Yeah. I think details like that go a really long way. Similarly, like we were talking about in Weird News about Geordie's being in Final Fantasy 16, I love an accurate accent with accurate slang and dialect. Mm-hmm. And it's even better if it's in a region of the game world or the game universe that makes sense, where they all talk like that. Mm-hmm. There's nothing worse than having someone talk in a strangled accent. WWE 2K23, for example, has a prolific character who's meant to be English and he sounds Australian and it's awful. It's like nails on a chalkboard. It's the most obvious, this person is not from the UK accent I've heard in recent
memory. It's like Paladin Mike.
Paladin Mike is awful, except Paladin Mike is actually voiced
by someone from
England, and it's just the worst accent I've ever heard. I don't know why, it drives me up the wall. Anyway, those details go a long way with me. I remember in particular the magazine I used to read at the time being absolutely blown away that in Uncharted Drake's Fortune, you could wander into a stream or a river and come out and there were wet marks on your clothes where you were.
Or if you walk
that
through
blew their minds.
And you walk through paint and then you hear footsteps.
It's also what I got here, except I put blood prints coming from a slightly different angle where you walk through blood, or snow prints, walking on sand. You know, you leave little footprints
in
there.
I like accurate defamation of like mud and stuff and deep snow.
Racing games as well for the MotorStorm specific Rift was very good at that. I love that sort of stuff. So yeah, just makes it all a bit more believable. Maybe not so much in the... from the perspective, I suppose, more so with the region-specific accents or dialects. Like, I can't pretend to be enough of an expert in anything to notice something like the chamber having a round in it and that being reflected in the ammo count. But certainly, I know when an English accent sounds wrong. And case in point, this very week, games are still doing it wrong. And it's so obvious. And I just wish that they'd do it better.
I also remember... in Halo 3, I used to watch Rooster Teeth, or well, not Rooster Teeth, Let's Play, Achievement Hunter. They used to do a series called Fails of the Week, where they would show clips, like 10 clips from Halo 3. And the good thing about Halo 3 is it had that system where you could watch back matches and stuff, but with a free cam, and take footage and like slow it down. And some of the stuff that like that engine will, it will simulate exactly what a bullet is doing, to the point that the sniper rifle in particular has a lot of ricochet on it. And like the bullets only traveled a short distance, it will bounce a lot. And sometimes you would have bullets that were like bouncing off the ground and then bouncing off like a grenade that had fallen out of a dead person's, like it was falling to the ground because you've just killed that person and the grenade had dropped out of their inventory. And it would like ricochet off the grenade and like blow the grenade up, or the bullet would hit someone. Stuff like that is amazing. Like if a game is actually working out bullet ricochets and stuff, which even nowadays, a lot of games don't do that. They just, if you're aiming at a thing, you've got a hit, or if you've not, then you've not. But, you know, to actually say, well, the bullet has bounced off there and over there and set that grenade off, that's really impressive. And you don't see that a lot, unfortunately. Well,
it's time.
It's time.
For something rather large.
Yep.
It's the big discussion. Big discussion time. It's time for the big video game discussion of this week. Comes courtesy of Mark Graham.
Two first names.
Thank you. Yeah. Who says, Hi, BAP. Recently, more people are encountering issues with their Wii U consoles failing. Long term, this is going to make preservation of some games incredibly difficult, as the likes of the Wii U are not easily emulated. Video games are culturally significant. Do you think more should be done to preserve them, either by fans or creators? Thanks. I've got a little write-up here from The Verge about this recent Wii U pandemic that says, thinking of dusting off your Wii U real quick before the eShop goes down forever so you can nab a digital copy of Wii Party while you still can? Well, hopefully, your Wii U is of sound health. Wii U owners on forums and Reddit are finding that their systems aren't working anymore, with errors many owners suspect are linked to them... suspect are linked to leaving them sitting unused for a long period. The issue seems to have come to light based on an account of a NeoGAF forums user, Cereza, whose friend booted up a Wii U system after a long while and got error code 160-0103 on the gamepad screen, which points to an issue with the onboard memory. Some Twitter users are also reporting the issue, and a similar error 160-2155, was also spotted by Reddit user Critical Hit Misses, who can't get to the download management app on their Wii U. So there's some strange stuff going on with the Wii U, which is very sad, obviously, but bigger discussion here. What's going to happen to all them games?
Well, as Mark's question is, do you think more should be done to preserve them either by fans or creators? I think fans are probably doing all they bloody well can at the moment. On the Wii U and on other consoles as well. I think more should be done by creators to even just facilitate fans being able to do all the work. I'm not expecting Nintendo to go through their catalog and somehow provide, you know, like specially preserved digital versions of all the games or anything like that, but just, you know, making software open source, and like if there's any like hardware specs that are kind of secret or not well understood by a community, things like that should be put out there. I can't think what game it was actually. I think someone submitted it for Weird News about a year ago. That someone had been on Twitter and said, hey, developer, just release the source code for this game from like the 1990s. You should do it because we all want it, and like we would be really happy. And then they just did. And so I think that's great that people should be able to just get in touch with developers. And I get that there's legal issues, unfortunately, with like just releasing source code. That is essentially owned by publishers rather than developers in that sense. But I personally wish that Nintendo, Sony, Microsoft, Sega would all just provide what is required by the community to do all the hard work and preserve this stuff. Because there will come a time where literally every single Wii U no longer works and every single SNES no longer works. And it's a real shame because they are culturally significant. So that's what I think, Ashton.
I agree with you that most preservation at this point, like 8 out of 10 times, is done by the fans of a game or a system. And I think that that is great. And I literally don't know what more fans can do about preservation, because with the Wii U console situation, this is the actual console that's failing. It's not even necessarily the games, which is something that fans can do, is protect the games by putting them on emulators or making them into ROMs, which obviously things like the Wii U and, you know, the 3DS, for example, is easier said than done. So there is ways of kind of like preserving games. But in terms of the actual like hardware itself, that's where like the issues lie, in that these hardwares will eventually become too, like you say, too old to work. Like we have a PlayStation 1 that we've just got back from like Ben's parents' house, and we can't plug it into anything because we haven't got any TVs that will take the input, which is an easy fix to, you know, do. But eventually we'll get to a point where that those kind of fixes that are easy will become a lot harder and become basically impossible. So the only way that I think a creative, like a developer or a company could actually like preserve these games is by creating a, like, not an emulator software, because we've already seen that kind of thing with like the mini, what are they called, the PlayStation mini things.
Yeah. The classic console.
Thank you. Yeah, we've already seen them do that and it's gone down like a lead balloon. But it would be good for these companies to come up with some kind of solution where you don't actually need a Wii U to play these games, because we have made this software where you can play your Wii U games, but you don't have to have a Wii U. And it's a shame, because it's nice to have the actual physical console, but just because you have the physical console doesn't mean you're actually playing any games on it. I mean, a lot of people have PlayStation 2s, but then emulate PlayStation 2 games. You know, you don't necessarily need to have one or the other. But it is nice to be able to have the option, I guess. But I think the only way it would be fixed is if the creators kind of put more stock into preservation and like the history of their own companies, which I just don't think that they do, because they're so focused on what's coming next and the future of their company and the future of the games, that a lot of them just don't really care, because they don't need to, because it's not making them any money. They'll just pop it on, like, you know, Nintendo have got their NES and SNES service thing, I can't remember what it's called, where they put a bunch of SNES and NES games on there, but not every single game will eventually go on there, and not every single Xbox game is on Game Pass, and not every single PlayStation game is on PlayStation Plus Premium, for example. So they're putting a little bit more stock into it, but only after like begging and begging and begging from fans who want to play these old games but can't. So it's up to them, really. They're the only ones that can do anything about it, I think.
The problem with emulator software is that it's not plug and play. Like, we know that we have... You can't just download the ISO. You can't even just put the disc in and run it on an emulator, because sometimes, depending on your renderer that you're using or your various plugin settings, it doesn't always work. So what I would love to see is to see Nintendo and Sony and everyone else like license out the rights to a company who are permitted to make actual compatible hardware, like essentially recreate those old consoles in a way that if you put a disc in there or a cartridge, it will just play it because it's essentially the same hardware. But there would be massive licensing issues with that. But I think that would be a great thing to see, just an actual physical recreation.
I think there's like a crazy one for Nintendo that's definitely... I don't know about the legality of it, but it's like a third-party emulation device, basically. And it's just, it might be handheld. I remember seeing it at the time. It's got a huge slot on the top. So it plays like N64 games, Game Boy cartridges and all sorts of, like, you just slot them in and then it plays them. Something like that would be great. Something like that would be really good. It's fans are doing enough. Players are doing more than enough. But as you guys are saying, emulators are not plug and play. If you want to access this stuff, you have to have a PC, and then you have to have a knowledge of how to make these emulators work, and some are far more of a pain in the ass than others. They're all different. Stores being shut down obviously is not helping the digital stores. So Sony a couple of years ago reversed the decision to shut down the Vita and PS3 stores, but they are far harder to access now. You have to actually go via the console. You can't access them through like a web browser store or anything. It's the 27th of March for the Wii U and the 3DS to be shutting down their stores. So a lot of people now are booting up those devices and trying to buy anything that they want. But frustratingly, and this was the case with the Vita as well, because I fell foul of this too when they were going to shut it down soon. And I was like, oh God, okay, I should go buy some things that I want. There were no sales at all. Mm. And considering they're shutting down these stores forever, why wouldn't you just have everything be 75% off? Yeah. They would sell so much more.
Because they know that if you want a game, this is your last chance to get it, so they can hike the prices up.
And this is part of the problem as well, Ashton, is that these online services like Game Pass and PlayStation Plus and the Switch Online things with the SNES, N64, Game Boy stuff that they're drip feeding is done deliberately now to monetize it. They are they have no interest in making it widely accessible because they're not going to make any money off it, and they know that they can
capitalism.
Yeah. And then you add to the heaping stack of issues here is that emulation isn't strictly legal.
No.
Unless you're burning your own discs that you own, you're going to potentially have a bit of an ethical dilemma on your hands. There are a few fantastic websites. We're going to make sure they're in the link dump, but just to read them out quickly, emulation.gametechwiki.com lists every emulator available for every piece of hardware that's ever existed, and then has loads of checkboxes that tells you which is the best for doing certain things, and if it's up to date or if it's still experimental, that sort of stuff. And r-roms.github.io is I think it's Reddit's mega ROM extravaganza effort, where there are dozens and dozens of ROM websites and ISO websites, and they can be full of bad ads that take you to fake downloads. This is actually a proper website categorized A to Z for each platform, and it's all stored on archive.org, and it's all very reliable. And that's a brilliant resource that fans are building because developers and publishers are not. And micro consoles and mini consoles are a half step that are, again, there to monetize things. And then there's all sorts of issues with licensing, especially with soundtracks and stuff, that means that even if they wanted to, publishers, developers, console manufacturers couldn't have like a legacy store filled with every game they've ever released. They just can't do it. But it doesn't mean that they couldn't do more.
Yeah.
And that's a shame.
That's the problem with them monetizing this kind of stuff, is that I would happily pay to just have PS1 games run on my PS5. But the problem is that, well, number one, if you're talking about Sony, it's, you know, almost non-existent anyway. But even if it did work, like you say, they're not going to be able to put everything on there. Mm-hmm. So for them to say, oh, well, we're keeping it all back so that we can charge you for it. You can have my money if you can, like, actually provide the games that I want to play. But a lot of them just aren't ever going to be available because of licensing issues. Mm. So that's why the hardware needs to exist, I think.
Yes. And as you say, more and more of these consoles are dying. And there will be a point where none of them work. That's still a while away, but there is going to reach a point where the only way to play these games is to have a console that works and buy some kind of adapter to plug it into, you know, whatever the conventional TV port is at the time, emulate potentially against the law, and or be subservient to these storefronts that either won't exist or will not offer what you want, or will not play it like, or let you play it like you want, you know, with a modern controller or whatever.
We're also going to reach a point, and I think very soon, where you won't be able to play disc games because the games that you have on your disc, you won't be able to update or get the, like, you know, upgrades to playable. Because a lot of games that you get on the disc, they come out and it's a day one patch because they have to fix a bunch of stuff. And you're eventually going to have to start playing these games completely unpatched without a single, like, iota of dev help, because they've just, this is how it comes and you have to play that. Whereas obviously, like, older games, you didn't have that. It had to come ready. But
it's going to create a whole new headache where people are trying to identify the different printed versions of the discs. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, this one came out. If it's got this tiny code on the back of the box, that means it's from 6 months later. So that's the one you want to buy.
Because
otherwise it will just crash every time you try to apply a new shirt in the character customization or whatever. Anyway, that's a fun nightmare that continues. Why don't you go and watch the What Went Wrong with the PlayStation Classic, where Philip touches quite a lot on micro consoles, obviously, and also the issues with video game preservation and such. It's a great video on our channel. Go see it now.
You can find them on youtube.com/teamtriplejump.
Nice one, Peter.
Thanks. And we're also on twitch.tv/teamtriplejump. On both Twitch and YouTube, we do streams. And when we're streaming, we are modded by Lord Brotovich, Trowling Badger, and Mr. Black. If you've got Amazon Prime, you're already paying for a free Twitch sub. Did you know that? You can spend it on us. It's
did
no
you?
Cost.
Did you know that?
Did you know that? It?
It's in the bundle. There's also twitter.com and facebook.com/teamtriplejump. You can go to both of those for legacy video content, video and live stream announcements, bits of news, highlights of the week from Twitch, loads of stuff posted by Fraser. Thank you, Fraser. TikTok.com/@teamtriplejump for our TikTok, where Ashton is ticking and sometimes talking. And patreon.com/teamtriplejump. Loads of tiers available there with loads of different rewards. So go and have a look at them and decide which one works for you.
I made a Peter Austin fan cam last week, so you can go and watch that if you want to.
What? What's a fan cam?
It's like an edit.
Oh my God, I didn't know this.
It's not really a fan cam. Whoa. It was just, but someone was like, oh my God, I love a Peter Austin fan cam. And it wasn't a fan cam, but it made me laugh that that is kind of true.
But what is a fan
cam? It's basically, you know when you see like on
Twitter
where they'll be like, oh, I love this tweet. And then underneath, there'll be like a full video of like a K-pop star where it's got like edits and
like
music underneath.
And music. I've seen those.
That's not what I made of you.
Okay.
That's I am so lost. I have no idea what this is.
You don't
this
know
is
what a
fan
cam is.
No, I feel like I've completely
it's
missed
not even
this
a,
trend.
It's
like a part of stan culture is okay. Like you make like edits of people or like characters or like
years,
musicians that your fans are.
You have to send me an example.
You'll see a tweet of like some character, a scene from an episode of something that's just gone out. Uh-huh. And then like the top reply will be from someone whose Twitter account is called like
Peter's number one fan
or Pedro Pascal stan.
And they'll reply like, oh, I really love this episode. But then like attached to every single one of their tweets is just like an edit that they've made. Of like
just like
Pedro
a super
Pascal.
Cut of like him just like doing stuff
being
and
handsome
like,
and stuff
okay maybe I've seen maybe,
like filters
maybe
seen. And
I'll show
music.
You one after we've
okay,
done this
okay it's gonna upset me isn't it
yeah probably
it's gonna really make me
but
cross.
I did not make a like fit fan cam of you Peter. That's I can if you want but we have a website, it's triplej.mup, tripleju.mp, it spells jump, it's very clever. If you want to join our Discord, you go to triplej.mup/Discord, chat with our wonderful community. On Discord, we're modded by Jack, Joe, Tori, and Holloway. So if you want to do something, bloody well do it, all right?
Don't be weird,
don't
guys.
Don't be weird.
Behave yourselves.
If you want to listen to the podcast in its audio forms, you go to triplej.mup/podcast. To check out any of our live stream VODs, go to triplej.mup/VODs. To book a cameo from any of us three and Jenkins, go to triplej.mup/cameo. And lastly, if you want to buy some sick and cool merch, like this, like this, like this.
Not that shirt, though.
You can go to triplejumpshop.com and make sure you're following @triplejumpshop on Twitter for the latest merch announcements.
Yeah, loads of amazing logo merch on there. It's still chilly out. Get yourself a nice big Moog. Get yourself an
hood.
Hat.
And hat.
And hat.
And hat away. And also an hoodie. Yes. Mm. Stay
scorfs.
Warm.
Are the scorfs still available?
Yeah, I think the Sports Time scorfs are out there, as well as the Troc jockets. We've got to stop that. Why not follow Peter and Ashton on Twitter and Instagram @ThatPeterAustin and @ScrambledAshton and myself just on Twitter @Confused_Dude. We do lists every Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, streams every Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Thursday being the joint stream.
Blaze it.
On YouTube, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Friday, being solo streams on Twitch. We might be looking to change that up next month. Just an advance warning. I know most of you have tuned out now because we're doing
the outro. Give it a little
taster. But yeah, potentially we may be doing some joint streams on Twitch for a little while, just to see how that goes. Mm. Worst Games Ever is fortnightly, Friday for patrons of a certain tier, Sunday for everyone else. We do the podcast every Saturday and we do the shows all the flipping time, including a brand new episode of one this very week, which I'll get to in a second.
Yes.
Why not leave a 5-star review on your platform of choice? It helps something to do with Al Gore's rhythms. Thank you very much to all of you who've left nice reviews. Those of you who haven't, we're talking to you right now. Go and do it, please. It'll just take a second. Even if you just do 5 stars and just type the word good. Good.
Good.
Good.
Yeah.
What came out this week?
Main Menu. It's back. It's a delicious sweet treat.
Mm-hmm.
And there is
a breakfast sweet tweet.
And there is an almost disaster that mm-hmm. happens in it. It must be watched.
I think it's very good. See.
An
it
unnatural
is.
Disaster.
It's yeah. out now at time of release, so mm. check it out on channel. Maybe, everyone should watch it because it doesn't get as many views as everything else, but I think it's one of the best shows, so you should yeah. go watch it.
And everyone who loves it, everyone who watches it loves it, and everyone yeah. who loves it watches it.
Yeah, that's kind of the issue.
Tell people about it.
Everyone tell your friends about it, yeah.
yeah.
Also, this week, boys, it was the worst games ever week, isn't it?
Yeah,
sure
yeah.
is.
So if you're a patron, you would have seen the video already. But was Worst Games Week, what was it?
It was Doctor Whom and the Eternity Clock.
Mm-hmm.
About time we played one of them.
About time.
Oh, did you want me to do that? Oh,
oh,
oh, oh, bloody hell. Oh,
did it?
Did we do that? Yeah, it's out now. No, it's not. It's out now for patrons, as Ashton said, Sunday.
Yes,
tomorrow for everyone else. Mm-hmm. Go check it out. Ashton, you got a sponsor?
I do, yeah. It's from Hit Game. It's coming out next week. I hope it's a Hit Game. Fingers crossed. It's coming out next week. It's, of course, Chia Pet. To Chia Pet.
Neopets, yeah.
To Chio Pets.
To Chio Pets.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Thanks for watching / listening, everybody. We'll catch you next time. Bye.
Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.